Inside information, Maine's best guest list, and the home of smart sports talk. Live from Seasons Restaurant at 427 Main Street in Bangor on The Pulse, AM 620, WZON, and online at WZONThePulse.com. This is Downtown with Rich Kimble.
Hey, welcome in. It's hour two of Downtown on a Thursday afternoon, live at Seasons Main Street in Bangor and our Quality Jewelers broadcast studios. Downtown is presented by Hollywood Casino, Hotel, and Raceway at 500 Main Street in downtown Bangor. Guests of the program are heard on the Tiller and Rye telephone line. Going on right now at Tiller and Rye, a Gagan Brothers special tasting. 5 to 7 tonight. You can buy Gagan bottles anytime at Tiller and Rye, but tonight, stop in between now and 7 and sample the local brews for yourself while checking out Tiller and Rye's selection of locally grown produce, local meats, and more. Gagan Brothers Brewing, their special tasting now until 7 p.m. at Tiller and Rye on the corner of Main and Wilson Streets in Brewer. Quick check of the headlines this afternoon. British Open, round one today is in the books. Dustin Johnson, the leader at 7 under par, a crowd of 6 tied at 6 under par, including Retief Goosen. Jordan Spieth, the winner of the Masters and the U.S. Open, 5 under par within 2 shots of the lead as he tries to win his third leg of the Grand Slam. Also in sports this afternoon, Liz Wood of the University of Maine named America East Female Scholar Athlete of the Year. In the broadcast world, Colin Cowherd will be leaving ESPN. We told you that was a pretty good possibility a couple of weeks ago. Looks like when his contract runs out at the end of the calendar year, he will be moving on to Fox Sports, another big departure at ESPN. Headlines brought to you by The Stray Dog. You've heard the great reviews. Now try it for yourself at a new location. The Stray Dog food truck is open for lunch on the Bangor waterfront near Pompey Pizza and Wild Cow Creamery, Tuesday through Saturday from 11 to 2, dogs, bombs, and subs with the quality you've come to expect from the family dog. For menu items, updated locations, and more, find the Stray Dog on Facebook or visit StrayDogTruck.com for the Stray Dog. Well, having a good time this afternoon discussing the topic of youth sports in studio with us, Bob Cobb, the former dean of the College of Education at the University of Maine, Tim Bowdy from the Bangor Parks and Recreation Department as well. This hour, we'll talk with Duke Albanese, Maine's former education commissioner, Bob Walsh, the coach of men's basketball at the university, and Tom Ferry from ESPN and the Aspen Institute. And among the questions we talk about here in youth sports is skill development. And there's a lot of debate out there as to when some of these, especially sports-specific skills, can be learned. Tim, you work a lot with young kids, and there's certainly a lot of research out there that says skills that translate to, like, high school-level athletics can't really be learned pre-puberty.
That's correct. What I think you try to strive for, and actually there's some national programs like a run, jump, and throw program for USA Track and Field that, yes, it's based on track and field, but it leans back towards the three basics, run, jumping, and throwing, that you're going to use in a lot of sports.
Right.
And I think a lot of the crossover from any sport. We try to teach a lot of the younger kids to start with the skills, knowing that they may not be able to do them yet. Actually, years ago, having John Giannini come in when he was coaching at the University of Maine, was almost an overload principle. You mention things, you talk about it. It may be 5 years before it ever really hits, but they've heard it. And then I think the whole skill-wise, and we were talking off air, you know, when Little League rolls around, your 12-year-old with the mustache usually tends to be your best Little Leaguer.
Right.
And then the others get mustaches, the bases become 90 feet, you're pitching from 60 feet, and everybody catches up.
Absolutely.
And I think that's when we can really start to see where that athlete's going to be most of the time. And too many times we're pigeonholing kids at second, third, fourth grade and telling them already, hey, you know, I don't think you're good enough to play basketball. You're not good enough to play baseball. So they start to not want to keep doing it.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we lose kids, too. We're losing a lot of late bloomers. Everybody cites the Michael Jordan example, but there are thousands of kids out there who have that late growth spurt or who just don't develop the hand-eye coordination till a little bit later. And if they get cut, and this is a difference from a generation or so ago, if they get cut from a team at 11, 12 years old, most kids are then done with that sport.
That's right. And I think with anything, if we tell a child that he's not good at math, I think you're going to have the same thing. Mm. And children are so impressionable that once they hear something even just once like that, you know, they take it to heart and, well, why am I going to try now? I'm no good.
Absolutely.
And that's just not what we want to see. And as a Parks and Rec, and I think around the country, more and more people hopefully are realizing how important that is to let the kids play, let them learn the skills needed to play every sport, not sport specific. Don't be doing one sport. Okay, at 8 years old, you're going to only be a baseball pitcher and you're not going to play any other sport and do anything else.
Right. Let's welcome another guest to the discussion this afternoon. Joining us on the phone, the former Commissioner of Education in the state of Maine, one of the leaders of the Sports Done Right movement in Maine, and now working with the Great Schools Partnership, Duke Albanese joins us. Duke, welcome to the conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And just listening to the conversation to this point, in the last few minutes, I mean, I think you're hitting on some absolutely important issues as we sort of sponsor the kinds of opportunities we want all kids to have, but that we recognize, you know, their development matters, and we want to keep them in the game, and we want to give them the opportunity to be able to, you know, there are a lot of late bloomers, and there are a lot of youngsters who kind of, you know, peak early, at least in the eyes of many people, which becomes pressure later on that isn't necessarily the best. And I mean, I hear you also touching on, you know, sort of the notion of building athleticism, and I think really good coaches will tell you at higher levels that, you know, youngsters who get a chance to play a variety of sports, they develop their motor skills in a host of ways that serve them well in that sport. And maybe, you know, this movement to year-round athletics, and I see a lot of it at the youth level now, you know, it's overdone, and youngsters have to end up choosing and picking maybe too early in their careers, and everybody loses in that situation.
Duke, Bob Cobb is here in studio with us. And when you guys began the Sports Done Right program, you got some resistance from people, especially at the high school level. And part of that had to do with the whole notion of sportsmanship. And it amazes me that there are people who would view sportsmanship as a negative. Were you guys surprised by that?
Well,
go ahead, Bob.
I was quite surprised, but I think there was a misinterpretation from the beginning. Somebody laid their idea of what sports should be onto Sports Done Right, and they assumed that we were anti-competition, which is, it couldn't be further from the truth. And so we did get a little pushback. It wasn't a very public pushback. But we were really encouraged to see the response of school systems across Maine when we piloted Sports Done Right. We had a number of schools who wanted to be involved with that. Brewer, mm-hmm. It was one of them. And then we offered training regionally to a lot of school systems who couldn't be in the pilot phase, and a very large number of them stepped up. So I think overall, people saw the problem with the sports, the way it was being conducted, and were asking us to tell them what the experts think. You know, we hear a lot of competing views, but what's the research say? What do people really think we should be doing with high school and middle school sports today?
So, Duke, are we doing a better job all these years later in Maine with our high school programs?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I mean, I get to see a lot of ball games in Maine, and it's our passion. And now with grandchildren, we're sort of seeing a whole nother cycle. And so, you know, we take in our fair share at all levels of athletics in the state. And, I mean, my hat goes off to the people who volunteer their time and their efforts to give kids the chance to play. And a lot of that now is fundraising to make those opportunities, you know, occur. I think we still have a lot of challenges. In education, one of the most difficult jobs, and I mean, almost a day doesn't go by that we're in a conversation about it, is the athletic administrators. These folks that do, you know, that are athletic directors and have to oversee the sports programs, they're not easy endeavors. And part of that is getting qualified coaches. That was one of the major core principles of Sports Done Right, that, you know, in many respects, the experience is as good as the coach. And for our youngsters, no matter at what age, how practice is conducted, how the skills are taught, the sportsmanship is modeled, all of those things come, you know, first from that coach. And then that goes out to relationships. And There's still concerns out there. I mean, there were some of the people, I think, on the prior question about, Bob really hit on it. And they questioned a little bit about competition because I think we were pushing the notion of opportunity. We wanted to be a little bit like the long-storied independent schools of New England, where they all have, everybody gets to play on a team. They have the resources to offer a lot of different levels so all kids can play. And we think that that's an important thing. And some people, I think, interpret that as, well, you're not, going to get down to the very, very best kids and the travel teams, and that's what it's all about. I think a challenge also for the athletic administrators and for coaches are parents. God bless them. I see a lot of the good people. They want the best for their kids. They want things, to be successful as they experience, their children experience sport from an individual athlete and also as a member of a team. But, boy, we take it to a level at times that's still pretty tough, and it's really not acceptable. And most of that falls, with the athletic administrators, and unfortunately, it falls on athletic coaches who maybe they still aspire to coach and they put their time in, but maybe they don't stay as long as some of us used to because we had far more rewards than we had sort of the pressures. And I think for many of the parents, they're well-meaning, and if they think about it and reflect on how a situation happened or, maybe it's not the most important thing to keep track of the playing time that your youngster got. Maybe it's more important to teach about team, and maybe it's more important for kids to experience a variety of positions as they come up through the grades and they really learn the sport and the context of the sport. So I think we have a lot of challenges yet. I have to say, and I'm probably biased, and Bob will as well, and I know others who are involved with Sports Done Right. But if you take that document now, Rich, and you take a look at what that group, and that was a pretty extraordinary group of people, Mainers, who were on that select panel, who then went out to hundreds, thousands of folks throughout Maine to get their best ideas about what it would look like if we develop these core principles and practices, and a lot of them are very relevant today.
Joining us back again is Bob Bigelow. And Bob, as somebody who was tremendously successful in your athletic career going on to the National Basketball Association, how do we balance the needs of the average athlete up against the elite athletes in our high school and middle school programs?
Well, I could go a number of different directions. And by the way, hi, Duke. It's been a while.
How you doing?
And I could go a number of different directions. First of all, you got to be careful with that word elite, one that I've shamelessly tried to forget the last 25 years of my life. Yes, there is a distinction in talent. Let's get away from the high schools for a minute. And I'm glad Duke brought up Sports Done Right. And I did talk to, I'm having a senior moment, what was her name, who was the administrator?
Karen Brown.
What's that?
Karen.
Karen Brown.
Right.
Karen, right, yeah. Several conversations, finally met her in Connecticut, of all places, at one point in time. And then I thought you guys were really onto something, and to be honest, given the size of your state vis-a-vis other states in the country, I thought you had a really good chance, because once you're in athletics up there for about 5 or 10 years, everybody knows everybody. But getting away from that, the huge challenge, and this is what Tom Ferry is doing, and of course I was gone for a half hour, so maybe you played his clip, is the what they're terming physical literacy, is getting everybody a chance to play and to be active in sports, no matter what talent they have, which is a huge, obviously, challenge in high school in this country where we have, I don't know what the number is, what is it, 55 to 60 million students, and the middle school, which would be 3 grades, do the math. It's very, very difficult, and Duke mentioned the independent school, which we've got hundreds around the Northeast who do a very good job of this, generally because they have smaller sample sizes to play with. The schools just aren't as big as some of your whoppingly big public high schools. So I like getting as many kids as involved, but of course it takes money and it takes creativity at the administrative level, not just the athletic administrative level, but also the educational administrative level, all the way up to school committees and school boards. The physical literacy side of what Tom and his group at Aspen are doing yields some pretty good promise, because they're looking at some of the best practices from other countries, developed countries in the world, that are doing this. So there are no easy answers, especially on a Thursday afternoon on a radio radio station, but there are some pretty good people out there exploring different ventures and adventures.
Well, let me throw this question out. Let me throw this out to all of you here this afternoon. We're coming up on one of the biggest events in youth sports, the nationally televised Little League World Series. Is it a good thing for kids of that age to be playing under that spotlight, but at any level, when should we start playing high-stakes tournaments with travel teams or with any groups? Are we starting that too young? And I open that up to any of you.
On my end, you know, you see it starting younger and younger all the time. You get into that middle school level, maybe that's where you kind of get more into the travel programs. And I think when you get to the Little League level, yeah, to put those kids on that kind of stage, television cameras rolling, it's tough. My daughter played 9-10 All-Stars this year in softball, and they lost their last game of the season, and it really was devastating. There was a lot of pressure. We had, you know, little girls crying about different situations. Nothing bad, but it's a lot of pressure to put on these kids that they're just not ready. They're just not ready sometimes.
Combine that with
I used to say ninth grade, but hey, I'm an old guy. I would love to see all that crap thrown out of anywhere before seventh grade. To be honest, I mean, the Little League World Series has been around since the early 1950s, and I know that 11 and 12 year old boys were playing in it back in 1954. So I get it. That cat's been out of the bag for over 60 years. The challenge is, of course, as I've always said, is what I call the creep effect. Once you do it at grade X or age X, I will guarantee you within 3 to 5 years it will be down another age, and 3 more years down another age. And as I can tell you guys, you probably know all the horror stories. We now have 8 and under national AAU basketball championships. By the way, folks, that's kids just out of second grade playing full court basketball at 10-foot hoops. And we have statewide T-ball championships in Florida and Texas, and probably a few other southern states now because they don't want to get behind. So this is the creep effect. Once you get into a certain grade, it's going to creep downward, just like the 9 and 10-year-old softball stuff, which is, again, that's fourth graders, for crying out loud. When does it stop? Well, as I tell people all the time, in utero. It's about as far as you can go.
Duke, I wanted to ask you this from an educational perspective. At the middle school level, we've seen a lot of schools add more teams, more opportunities, B teams and things of that sort. But when you do that, you also have to water down the pool of coaches that are available out there. How important is it at high school, but I think especially at middle school, how important is it to have on-staff educators coaching our kids?
Well, it's huge. And many of us, I mean, that's how we started out. You know, we started out as, it was just, you know, when you graduated from college and you were thinking about going into teaching, you know, and you played sports, then usually it was on your mind, I want to teach and I want to coach. And that was sort of the feeder program for a long, long while. And during the deliberations on Sports Done Right, much of the discussion centered around, so where are our coaches coming from? And where will we get them, and how are we going to serve, you know, a program if we're going to build it a bigger program, as you say, and have more teams? Who will those coaches be, and will they be skilled enough and have the expertise to do a good job? So, I mean, it's become an issue. I remember even during the discussions on Sports Done Right, a front page feature appeared in the Manchester Union Leader in New Hampshire, where they did an in-depth analysis of who the coaches were in New Hampshire. And, you know, their clamor was, holy Moses, we have so few now. And now we're significantly below 50% in middle schools of, you know, and that's going to soon be the K-12, you know, coaching faculty. There will be fewer and fewer and fewer teachers, people trained to work with young people at different ages, you know, teaching kids on athletic fields and in gymnasiums and in pools and rinks and that kind of thing. And that's what we see. I mean, and it's an issue. And a lot of the folks that I talk to, you know, this spring we did conferences with the athletic administrators, and we're working on some new academic eligibility policies with the Maine Principals Association and with the Maine Interscholastic, you know, athletic administrators. And a lot of their concerns is, where am I going to find that coach? We only had two real candidates, and one of them has dropped out, and I'm just not sure about the other one. And it goes like that. So it's a growing concern. And I mean, back a ways, you know, as a long-standing former dean at the university, I mean, Bob, he won't own up to this, but
I know that some profs at some of the colleges of education across the country, you know, they weren't so keen on having their teachers graduate, you know, from their university colleges of education, go into teaching, and, you know, kind of, I want to stop my teaching career and coach at the same time. So they were kind of saying, you know, maybe that's too much. And all of these factors work together so that we do have now a lot of the coaches, sitting coaches in Maine schools and throughout the country, do not come from the faculty. And they're from the local community, some of whom have risen up, followed their kids as the kids were, you know, as they were coaches of their youngsters in youth sports. And their pedigree and what they know about the game and how they know about dealing with kids, it varies. And a small pool is not the best, you know, as we know. So it is a worry, and I think it's something, I mean, if we go back to one of those core principles, as I mentioned, the quality of coaching really does have a lot to do with the experience that youngsters get.
All right, we have to take a break here. 25 minutes after 5 o'clock, downtown, discussing youth sports. Been a great conversation. More to come. Coach Bob Walsh joining us. Tom Ferry from the Aspen Institute as well. We'll pause right here. Get a quick check on the weather from News Center Steve McKay, which is brought to you by Van Sickle Kia, where summer is on them.
Weather perfection. Yep, that's what we got around the state of Maine, and it looks like more of the same to come for tomorrow. Look for a clear sky for tonight, and with a light wind, we got some radiational cooling. Temperatures dipping into the 40s, lower 50s, so kind of chilly for a July night. Tomorrow, sunshine with increasing clouds late in the day, 70s for the high. Now, the weekend will feature quite a bit of cloud cover, partly to mostly cloudy both days. Look for a scattered shower, daytime highs in the 70s. Sunday could bring a scattered thunder shower. With more of the same for Monday, mostly cloudy, chance of a scattered shower, thunder shower, 70s for the high. For Downtown with Rich Kimball, I'm WLBZ News Center 2 meteorologist Steve McKay.
Kia's Summer on Us sale is heating up at Van Sickle Kia. Peter Van Sickle, tell us more.
We've got hot savings, up to $4,000 off MSRP, plus 0% financing, and we'll even make your first three payments when you buy any new 2015 Kia Optima, Forte, or Sedona minivan.
Wow, that's a lot of savings, and you won't have any car payments for 3 months?
You got it. Save up to $4,000 off MSRP, and you'll save even more with 0% financing for 66 months. Then just sit back and enjoy your payment-free summer.
Every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, the best in the business. $4,000 savings. Example, 2015 Kia Optima, stock number OP556. Must finance through Kia Motor Finance and qualify for all-factor rebates. Not all customers will qualify. Ends July 6th. See dealer for details.
At Van Sickle Kia in Bangor, this summer's payments are on us. More car, more value, less money. I'm Peter Van Sickle. I guarantee it.
The best things in life are free.
Take a trip down the red carpet. You'll discover a dazzling place where stardom becomes you. There's no place like Hollywood. Hollywood Casino Hotel and Raceway Bangor. Visit us at HollywoodCasinoBangor.com. Persons under 21 may not enter the gaming area unless licensed employees. Do you or anyone you know have a gambling problem? For help, services, and counseling, please call 1-800-522-4700. Maine residents, contact 211 for information and resources.
Thousands of people just like you have made the switch to St. Joseph Primary Care. Your family and friends can tell you why.
It's always been effective, and it's always been loving.
When I call and I need to be seen, they work me in with my provider.
They treat me just like I'm the only patient they have.
Call St. Joseph Care Choice at 907-3100 and join the I Chose St. Joe's conversation online. St. Joseph Healthcare, your providers, your choice.
Do we ever agree on anything?
We both like the Bangor Mall Cinema 10.
The cozy stadium seating.
I like the bargain prices for all shows on Tuesday.
Hot buttered popcorn and candy.
The Dolby and digital surround sound is perfect.
I think I'll have a birthday party there for the kids.
I've got 2 tickets.
I hope one of them's for me.
So we can check out that action movie.
No, romance. Comedy.
Bangor Mall Cinema 10 at 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Call 942-1303 or visit online at yourneighborhoodtheater.com.
Looking for a great place to enjoy dining? Try the Bangor Dining Room at Seasons. How about the best place to watch your favorite teams? Try the Sports Lounge. 2 distinct atmospheres, 1 sensational place. Located at 427 Main Street in Bangor. Need a place for a group or family event? Call 992-2250 for showers, rehearsal dinners, special luncheons, and sports parties. Our on-site broadcast booth allows you to enjoy the Downtown with Rich Kimball show. Located just 2 blocks from the Hollywood Casino, the Cross Insurance Center, and find us online at SeasonsBangor.com. Fans, food, fun, Seasons.
It's 5:30 on Downtown. The whole show today devoted to youth sports. We've been having a great time. We could do this for quite a while. We've talked about doing this again, and I'm pretty sure we will at some point. It's been very fun so far. We've got more to come. Bob Walsh from the University of Maine will add his perspective in just a few moments. Plus, we'll hear from Tom Ferry from ESPN and the Aspen Institute. Great to have Duke Albanese, the former commissioner of education, with us. Bob Bigelow as well. Tim Bowdy, Bangor Parks and Recreation in studio. And Bob Cobb, the former dean of the College of Education at the University of Maine, are here. Still ahead, we're going to talk about those travel teams, those AAU teams, and the idea of specialization. Is that the best way to get yourself a college scholarship? But we'll ask a guy who knows, Maine men's coach Bob Walsh, straight ahead. First, we pause for news here on the Pulse AM 620 WZON.